So, good afternoon. I'm reluctant to break the silence because you look very peaceful. You can stay peaceful. I'll do the talking. Now, we're each going to share some about taking the practice outside of the retreat. And then open it up also for some questions. We'll do some questions from some of the written form, but then also what's on your minds. We'd love to talk about some things that might be that you'd like to ask. So, what do you think? Is practice in the real world possible? So that's a trick question. Is this the real world? Here we are. Sometimes I love hearing it when people say, well, how do we practice in the real world? And so, this is the real world. In fact, usually we are not experiencing the real world. We are experiencing the world created by our delusion, right? The views and opinions we have, our cravings, desires, fears, anxieties, and it puts like a filter over our lens. So when is it that we really get to experience the real world? Some of the things I like to think about is, you know, what are we paying attention to on retreat? And we've broken it down, sometimes we've broken it down into those six sense doors. Right? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and then the mind door. And those are the same things we're going to experience in the world outside of the retreat, right? Same experiences. But of course, experiences present differently. Something Sayadaw says, which I really like this orientation, is we don't tend, at least right when we arrive, maybe by a few days in, we don't sort of go, my room, you know, it's like my meditation hall. We sort of have this orientation, these are just the conditions that are here. Maybe if we stay here long enough, we really say, my cushion, and, you know, my chair. I don't know if you have your favorite spot in the dining room now, and it's like yours. But, you know, we start to claim things, and then this, you know, orientation that everything belongs to oneself. And this is one of the things that makes it difficult in our life, which is when we approach the things that we're doing in our daily activity, our friends, our family, the sense of self gets very strong. It gets very activated. So can we bring this practice into our daily life? Yes, it is possible. And really, it is just a matter of doing this again and again. You know, if you have any kids that you're raising, or parents you're taking care of, plants you're tending to, it's ongoing. Right? It's ongoing. There's not kind of like a moment and done. That's the nature of the mind. Ongoing. And if we take care of it, it's not that we have to do a lot of work in any given moment, but there is a consistency. And if we really value this practice, it's natural that we want to keep it close. Right? It's natural. It's going to stay close to the heart because we realize the benefit. And there's all kinds of sort of practical things that we can do in our daily life that can help. You know, I've talked in a couple of groups of just waking up and having some sort of aspiration of how you want to live that day. Just dropping into the mind, how do I want to spend this day? And at the end of the day, to reflect on how that day was. Where did I get triggered? And where did I get overwhelmed? How did I get lost? You know, where was I balanced? What happened in those moments? So each day becomes this container that we can use, and we continue each day to just be interested. This really is a learning process. Mindfulness, awareness allows us to be present with our life, and if we invest our wisdom into it, into experience, to be interested, we will learn. Right? We'll learn about what's skillful, and we'll see habits of mind, things that we've never seen before about our own conditioning that is so close to us, right? It's like that analogy of a fish in the water, you know. In this case, like the conditioning of our habits, we say, oh, where's the water? You know, it's so close, you don't really feel it. And then you begin, as the awareness gets stronger, you realize, oh, these are these habits that I've been acting out, right? Our personality gets so familiar, we don't even realize the personality that we've put on, right? And that is just what our identity. So my encouragement just for now, and I'll come back around as we share more, don't think about it really as like something hard to do. It's like practicing here. The encouragements that we've offered you is to really to see it as, in a moment, remembering to be aware, valuing this, and resting, relaxing, and seeing our life as practice. Seeing a moment of talking, if you lose awareness in it completely, and you know that, great, feel that. You know, so then every activity that we do becomes, it really does become more interesting. How does it feel? How do we do it? How do I do this relationship more skillfully? And what's happening? And the more we invest these qualities in our life, in the daily life, this will grow. But like with anything, if we stop tending towards it, right, it doesn't get nurtured. Relationships get distant, they're not growing, right? Or plants, they begin to wither. So it's not beyond our ability. And yet it's very easy, of course, to get entangled in the pressures of life. And a big piece of this for me came about when I really realized that it doesn't take a calm moment to be aware. It's meeting what's happening in the present moment exactly how it is. We can feel completely overwhelmed, completely agitated, angry even. I remember the first time like getting, you know, caught in an argument with my partner. And then mindfulness would be there watching me argue. And I thought, oh, that's sort of strange. But then I would still be arguing because I had already invested myself in the argument. So I didn't want to stop because then it would be pretty clear that I was wrong or something. So I was like, okay, I'm already committed to this, so let's just keep doing it. Why not? I've already invested myself. But then I'm watching that, and it's like, oh, it's really interesting how these things play out. So you kind of just get interested, and it doesn't mean, and again, like, that's, it's really cool that having an energy of being attached to something doesn't mean mindfulness isn't there. Mindfulness can be there even when we're acting out some pattern. Right? And that's how we learn about experiences. Right? In a way, this is a more challenging thing because the conditions of life are going to trigger all kinds of reactive patterns. And if we see those as opportunities, that's how they get seen. And then in the seeing, right, we're not feeding them, we're seeing them. They may still have the energy to act out, but we're seeing again and again. Right? And increasingly, the wisdom grows in all the different territories of our life. So it's kind of overarching, more abstract, and I'll pass it on to Andrea to get some of the hard-hitting nuts and bolts. This is sort of the setup as if we had some plan. You know, so my orientation was broad strokes, and now Andrea's going to get in there with the fine-tunement.
We'll see what happens. Okay. Yeah, that was a good place to grow from in the thinking about taking the practice home. A couple of thoughts come into my mind about this, and one of the big ones is I teach a lot of daily life practice in my community. I teach non-residential daily life practice retreats, and one of the biggest things that I hear so often is, my life is too busy. I don't have time to be mindful. And that, I think, betrays the perspective that Alexis was pointing to, our sense, our idea that we have to work with mindfulness, it sometimes feels like, okay, in order to practice mindfulness, I have to put on this backpack and carry it around with me, and every time it's like, I'm going to be mindful, I'm going to take something out of that backpack, it's like, yep, mindful. And so it feels like work, it feels like extra to our day. And in exploring these daily life practice retreats, really this emphasis on the light touch is so helpful. Just the moments of recognizing, yes, I'm aware now, I'm aware now. I think here on retreat, we can, sometimes I talk about two kinds of mindfulness, essentially. It's not different mindfulness, but it's different conditions that mindfulness comes in, let's say. And these are referred to in, I think it's in the Abhidhamma, the Buddhist psychology. There is prompted mindfulness, which is the kind of mindfulness that we can actively engage in when we are mindful, reminding ourselves to be mindful. So this kind of is what we've been doing this on retreat. We have been encouraging that remembering. And we've encouraged a really light touch here. But still, this is the place, I think, where, you know, this is often the place where the efforting tends to get tense, and where we also feel like there's no way I'm going to be able to remember to do that while I'm in the midst of dealing with this fire at work or doing this other thing. Can I be aware of this fire? Can I be aware? Can I be aware? That kind of prompting in my teaching in daily life practice, I often just suggest, you know, not worrying about that part too much. The other kind of mindfulness is a kind of mindfulness that simply comes, called unprompted mindfulness. This is basically the moment of free, effortless mindfulness that comes when you remember that you have forgotten. That moment when mindfulness returns. And we talked about this at the beginning of the retreat a lot, the notice when mindfulness returns. Be curious, what's here in that moment? That moment is an effortless moment of mindfulness, whether it's happening on retreat or at home. You didn't have to do that one. And so there you are, you've woken up, you're picking up a glass of water, or you're stirring the rice, or you're cleaning the bathroom, or you're crossing the street, or you're driving the car. It's like, aware. The relationship to that moment is crucial. You know, as we've been talking about, this is no different instruction here in terms of you know, what we've been encouraging. Notice what's here. What have you woken up into? What's obvious? In that moment, it's been a gift that you have come back into awareness. Frequently what happens with that moment, well, there's different things that happen with that moment, but sometimes what happens with that moment is we've become aware of something, and the habit that often happens is that we become aware and our attention latches on to something that we have become aware of, whatever obvious thing that is. It's like, oh, that's something I need to deal with. Better clean that spot on the floor, or take care of that that thing. And so, you know, we basically lose the sense of the mindfulness itself, that, oh, I am aware, because the mind kind of dives into whatever is right in front of it. So it gets lost in that often. That's one thing that happens pretty habitually in daily life, is actually the moment of kind of becoming aware, becoming mindful, you know, it actually happens way more than you would think. It's like it shot through our day, these moments of mindfulness returning, but we kind of miss them. It's a moment, and then it gets submerged because we pick up and kind of get lost in whatever thing is right in front of us. Because that's the habit of that moment. That's unwise view around mindfulness. Just, oh, become aware, what is it that I need to do with this thing? And so the bringing the wise mindfulness, bringing the wise view into it is to be curious about, oh, awareness is here. What's that like? What's the experience now? What's the human experience now? And again, this is not much effort here, because this moment of mindfulness, you didn't have to do anything for it. It just arose. So in those moments, if you can, there's a couple of things. If you can just cultivate the kind of appreciation, we've been encouraging that here, cultivate the appreciation for mindfulness returning. Oh, I'm back. Mindfulness came back, and I didn't do it. That's also a pointer to not self, by the way. You know, who did that one? You weren't in charge of that one. Conditions created the arising of mindfulness. So there's mindfulness. And if you can be curious about that moment, appreciate that it's happened, and be curious about in daily life. So on retreat, we're getting familiar with what it's like for that moment to return. This is a little more challenging in daily life, because these moments of mindfulness return in so much variety of circumstances and so much variety of momentum of whatever it is we're doing. And so the recognizing the moment when mindfulness returns, as we get more familiar with it, it's almost like it does a quick, like, put the gears into neutral for just a moment to whatever momentum is going on. And it gives us an opportunity to, oh, this is mindfulness. This is what it's like to be mindful while I'm crossing the street and a horn is sounding in my ear. This is what it's like to be mindful while I'm driving down the freeway and somebody is cutting me off. This is what it's like to be mindful while I'm having a lovely conversation with a partner. You know, just whatever it is, we often get caught in variety of our habitual responses. And so just that moment of remembering that mindfulness, noticing mindfulness, kind of highlighting that moment when mindfulness returns, I would say that is my primary active practice in daily life. It's just connecting. It's a little bit of effort. It's less effort than kind of saying, am I aware? It's more like recognizing. It's recognizing, oh, this is awareness. So it's a little bit of that recognition of landing with the recognition of this is mindfulness. And that is pretty much all that I actively do in my daily life. You know, at this point, Alexis and Nisha were both talking about the putting the dots down, you know, each moment that your mindfulness comes back is like putting a dot down. And every moment that we recognize mindfulness in this clear way is like one of those dots. Just, oh yeah, aware. And what's here? What's obvious? And then get on with your day. Go ahead and, you know, just continue with your day. There will be, so each one of those is like putting a dot down, and what I've seen is the familiarity with that moment. You know, the familiarity with that experience itself of mindfulness returning and getting familiar with it in a variety of circumstances, it begins to, it's like the familiarity with it begins to sensitize us to that experience. And then we recognize it more. We don't have to make it happen more. We actually begin recognizing how much it is happening. And so it's, again, we get more moments of effortless mindfulness, more dots. And there's a kind of a momentum that can begin to develop over time with this kind of very gentle practice. And another piece of this is each of those moments of mindfulness returning, it's like it comes with its own little bit of momentum. You know, sometimes it comes just with hardly any momentum and it's basically getting drowned again. But we may be able to recognize that moment. But sometimes those moments of mindfulness return, and it's kind of like we're waking up with a little bit of a kickstart on that scooter. You know, that it's like this moment of mindfulness, and we can just ride that wave of mindfulness for 5 seconds, maybe, and be present for that experience of a little bit of momentum. These moments in my practice, it's like they begin to get closer together so that there begins to be this kind of thread of mindfulness through the day that is pretty effortless. There are times in the day when we can use a prompting, use a reminding, am I aware? There's certain activities that we can encourage that in, certain everyday activities. I play with this when I'm driving. You know, it's not much else I need to be doing. And my mind may think there's other things I need to be doing, planning whatever it is I need to do when I get where I'm going. But really, the mind has begun to realize that being here, you know, with whatever this is, that's the best kind of preparation for whatever it is I need to do wherever I'm going. And so, you know, so in certain circumstances or situations where there's not a lot of, let's say, analytical work that needs to be done by the mind, or, you know, where whatever it is that you're doing already has a kind of a practice habit around it, like driving. You know, we know how to drive, so we don't have to think about it so much. We can be curious. We can watch the mind while we drive. We can remind ourselves, are you aware? What's here? What's here? So for those times, I've played with this kind of prompting in grocery stores, when I'm shopping. I've played with it driving. I've played with it doing chores. And so there's a lot of areas of our day where we might be able to have a little bit of bandwidth for reminding ourselves to be aware. So finding those little pockets and letting those be like little practice pockets. So, you know, those of you who have kids who, you know, really have to be engaging with kids and responding to questions and packing lunches and, you know, all of the stuff that goes on around kids, you know, that kind of work where you're really back and forth engaging, you know, that may not be the time to remind yourself to be aware. But there may be times in your day when there are little stretches. And one teacher, Kamala Masters, said that in her early days of practice, she basically told her teacher, there's no way that I'm going to be able to practice mindfulness. I'm a single mom. I've got 4 kids. And her teacher at that time, Munindra, said, well, where in your house do your kids not disturb you? She said, well, when I'm doing dishes, they don't bug me too much. So, okay, this becomes your monastery. This is a time when you can remind yourself to be aware. And just simple, what's here now? Oh, warmth. Warmth of the hands. And what? How about now? Oh, thinking about packing lunch. Okay, thinking is happening. And how about now? Oh, feeling my feet on the floor. Okay, yep. How about now? Just moment after moment, what's obvious? What's obvious? For little stretches of time in everyday activity, in times where you do have a little bit of bandwidth for not having to engage with others. Now, what this might take is a little bit of a letting go of the view that, oh, this is the time when nothing else is coming in. This is my time to figure out everything. This is my time to think about all the stuff that is just like horrendously busy. This can take a little bit of trust to allow yourself to just be with what's here and kind of trust that when you get to the things that need to be done, the mind will be able to be there for that. So there's a little bit of trust there, a little bit of letting go of our habitual ways of believing that in order to navigate our day, we have to think it through. So that's a view, that's a belief that can use some reflection and maybe some weakening around. But the main practice that I really do point to is the just noticing those moments of mindfulness returning. Get really familiar with that. When you wake up in the morning, as Alexis suggests, kind of an intention, you know, just set that kind of as an intention. I'm gonna hope to recognize when mindfulness spontaneously arises, and I'm going to incline towards not judging myself for not being mindful in the moments before, but just to appreciate that I have that moment, that dot that's kind of putting down the little bit of mindfulness. Gill sometimes offers the teaching that no moment of mindfulness is wasted. You know, mindfulness with wisdom is really powerful, so powerful. Even just the moments of wake, as Alexis was pointing to his example of waking up in the anger and noticing the argument, waking up in the argument, it's like there was something being learned there. I was like, oh, wow, kind of invested in this, you know? Huh, this is interesting. So waking up in it, as I heard that story, it sounded to me like he wasn't thinking, oh, it's time to be mindful now. It was more like, oh, mindfulness arose. It's kind of, oh, here's what's happening, having an argument. Oh, wow, this is odd, feeling this investment. So that waking up into mindfulness, waking up and just noticing what's here and not judging what's happening, but just the curiosity. So in the morning, inclining towards curiosity and appreciation for those moments of mindfulness returning. And really, as Alexis, you know, Alexis said, the light touch, so important in daily life. There's one other thing that I found useful. Try to keep this in 2 minutes. That I found particularly useful in my daily life practice, and that was if there was something, some particular pattern or habit that I really wanted to understand in my daily life, in my mind. This was actually my very first meditation practice before I ever met Sayadaw. But the interesting thing was after I met Sayadaw and heard him describe his teaching, it's like, that's what I was doing at the very beginning of my practice. And that's kind of how I knew this was a very resonant practice for me. So I got really interested in understanding anger. And each day I was just going to, I set the intention, I'm just going to be mindful when that happens. So there was a kind of a setting and intention to connect with a particular pattern, a particular difficult thing. And, you know, I forgot a lot, but at certain points, you know, the forgetting, it wasn't possible to forget certain times because some kinds of the anger were so strong that, you know, anger tends to ratchet itself up. So at some point in that process of getting more and more and more and more and more angry, the mindfulness would return and it'd be like, oh, wow, this is anger. Boy, does this hurt. And just the simple, oh, wow, okay, this is what it feels like to be angry. This simple practice of just noticing that, and actually that very first time, I had little training in mindfulness, but at that point I had read some books, but you know, that moment of return into, wow, anger, wow, this hurts, what the heck do I do with this anyway? And at that point it was like, well, I don't know what I do with this, but I guess I go back to work. And that actually was probably the best thing I could have done, rather than trying to stay focused on the anger in any way, but just like that, the moment of mindfulness, the moment of recognizing, oh, this is anger, gave the mind the bandwidth to be able to not be magnetized by it, to not have my foot on the accelerator pedal, and to be able to choose to go back to just the simple activities of work. So I find sometimes that orienting that intention in the morning to a specific curiosity, interested in kind of waking up for this pattern, that's something that can help us to kind of, rather than saying in the morning, I'm going to wake up as much as possible, you know, I found that didn't quite have the traction for me somehow. But waking up for something specific began to give me some feedback of, oh yeah, 3 times today I noticed that anger. And yeah, you know, this is what happened. So that piece is also, I find, useful to pick a kind of an interest, really the key there. What are you really interested in learning about your mind? Because curiosity is such a motivator. Nisha, would you like to share some thoughts?
Let's see if I can think of anything that's left. This mind needs things to be really simple. And so some of the things that are helpful for me to touch into in daily life, and I have to say, I love what this practice offers in terms of practicing in daily life, and how, you know, it's really just the retreat that's coming to an end, that meditation is actually not coming to an end. And so one of the things is that very, very, very first instruction to relax. That one is so easily forgotten in daily life, that tension kind of creeps up. So remembering to relax, relaxing the meditating mind. And some of the ways that that I practice with that include the, you know, lying down and feeling into how that impacts the mind. Since lying down can be comfortable for the body. But I think another way that I remind myself about relaxing is really from time to time remembering that seeing is happening and that it's pretty effortless. Hearing is happening. I'm not trying to hear, it's just happening. So those kinds of things have helped. Even in daily life, just checking in time to time. And then I think the other is just thinking about kind of what serves as Dhamma nutrients in daily life. And one is taking time to reflect on the benefits of practice. That's been very energizing. And just thinking about ways to feed Dhamma to the mind, so listening to Dharma talks, etc., as skillful ways to support this being and connecting with this practice, and knowing that really taking care of the mind is really happening only in whatever moment is here. Sometimes it can feel like, oh, I gotta figure this practice out for, you know, and kind of do it over a long period of time, and it's really just in this moment that it's happening. Yeah, I think that's all I got.
I don't know what comes. I'm just thinking, it always feels like at the end, like towards the end, like there's some magic transmission that we're like trying to give, like, yeah, here's the secret. And if you just do this, yeah, it'll work. And basically the message is just trying to encourage, like, just keep going. Live your life. I love this encouragement, like from Seidel. Live your life. Do what you do. Bring your awareness with you. Right? Whatever you're doing, cooking, raising kids, you know, dealing with stress and, you know, watching movies, whatever it is, bring your mindfulness with you more and more, right? The life becomes more skillful, becomes easier and simpler when you're living with mindfulness, right? And the wisdom grows. Just, and just one inspiration point, there's another monk that I had studied with, a Tibetan monk, Mingyur Rinpoche, and he, at the time, this is about 4 years ago, he had written, he was going on a kind of solo retreat, going to be isolated, and he wrote, he started this retreat at a certain center, and then within a few days, they were coming in to give him, you know, his daily food for the day, and there was a note saying, I've decided to wander freely as the ancient ones do. I don't want to be in a center, I'm just... And he has a huge community that follows him. So for him already to take that time was a big thing. But then for him to say, see you. No one will know where I am. I will go on just wandering throughout India and Nepal, wherever he was going to be. Anyway, so that was very inspiring for my mind. And I thought, well, I always want Seidel. You know, he does so much teaching, Utejaniya, and I'm trying to get him to take some retreat time for himself. So I was telling him, Seidel, there's this Tibetan monk, and he's going off for 3 years to just wander. And Seidel was like, oh, very interesting. Not my way. So he just loves, He loves learning exactly where he is. And in a way, that's an inspiration, right? For where we are, good enough. And if we happen to go into, you know, if that's our personality or our inclination, great. Go on, you know, long retreats. But you know, you are exactly where Nisha says, you have this moment, that's it. That's always what we have. So wherever we find ourselves, if we really take heart in that, yeah, then we remember this is all we can do is right now, again and again. So, what's on your mind? What would you like to ask? Sasipriya, yeah, yes. Sasipriya.
So the question about unprompted mindfulness, what is that? What does it mean? So unprompted mindfulness is like you've had this moment so many times. I hope you'll recognize it as I describe it. So you're sitting. This is the easiest place. You're sitting in meditation, and you're present, but then the mind wanders, lost in thought. At some point, mindfulness returns. And there wasn't a conscious act of choice to make that mindfulness return. It was conditioned. There were conditions that led to the re-arising of mindfulness, but it wasn't something that was done through a personal effort. It just happened in that moment when, so it was, what prompted mindfulness is when you are already mindful, you can remind yourself, be aware. Am I aware? Am I aware? But that one where it arises after you've been lost in thought, so the mind has been wandering unmindful, there's a moment that mindfulness comes back. That moment is unprompted mindfulness.
I'm not able to relate it to, you know, maybe when I was cooking, how does it happen?
Okay, so yeah, and that's where it's kind of an exploration. So getting familiar with it here, so the question was not able to relate to how that happens when you're cooking or doing other activities. So here on retreat, you can kind of recognize it partly in some ways because, I mean, we have the support really of the container of the form at times here, like in sitting practice. You're sitting and the mind is off in some story and we're, you know, at the beach or in the mountains or arguing with a partner. And then the mindfulness returns in a moment and there's a contrast. It's like, oh, I guess I'm not at the beach. So there's the recognition, you know, of that the what's happening here is so different than what was going on in the mind that it becomes easier to notice that moment when mindfulness returns. In daily life, it can be a little more challenging because sometimes it's not necessarily that different. Like maybe we're absorbed in kind of like the dishwashing itself and maybe thinking about the dinner party that we were having or whatever, you know, the thing that happened when these dishes were being used. Or so we're thinking about something, but we're also doing the thing. And then mindfulness returns. And the feeling is just this recognition of, oh, the mind has been caught in some thought. And now I know that I'm here. And what's happening is I'm washing dishes. Now, sometimes it is more obvious because it's like this, like you are someplace completely else and you recognize again, it's like, oh, I guess I'm not having that conversation at work because I'm standing in front of the sink. So there's sometimes it's kind of obvious that there's a kind of a difference between what had been going on in the mind and what's actually happening in the present moment. So that can be some of the first places that we begin to get familiar with that, just like, oh, I had been caught in thought, and now I know that I'm here in the present moment. That's that moment. And it's as I was saying, it may at first be or feel like there's so many different places that comes up. Like what we're doing here is cultivating the familiarity of recognizing that in the sitting, in the walking, and in all of our activity, hopefully, you know, in our yogi jobs. But there's so much less to do here that it can be easier to recognize that moment. And so it is harder to recognize that moment when mindfulness returns, when we've realized we've been lost in thought, but that we are now here. What I'd like to encourage in that moment is not so much the emphasis on, oh, I've been lost in thought, which is sometimes where the mind goes, instead to awareness is here. Mindfulness is here. It's the same moment of recognition, but the emphasis is more on here rather than what the mind had been doing. So the familiarity with that moment, it can take some time through the course of the day to start to get familiar with the way it feels, like in the grocery store, driving, talking to your kids, or you know, reading a book, or even working on the computer. You know, this moment can return, but there's but familiarity with that experience begins to make it more familiar over time. Does that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I have seen that a lot of times.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so the thing is, so we've seen that a lot of times. What's important now is to recognize it's valuable to see that. As opposed to, oh, that's that, and, you know, get on with my day. It's like, oh, mindfulness, like landing in the value of that. Yeah. Did either of you want to say
no,
more?
It's okay. Complete.
Okay.
You reminded me of a question that I forgot I had. I read a lot, and I was thinking, how is one mindful reading? Please?
Actually.
Yes, Nisha. Causes and conditions come together.
Just seems like a great question for you. But you don't. If you don't want to, I'll throw it to you.
I have nothing to say.
You have nothing to say?
This is definitely destined for Nisha. Nisha. No.
Mindfulness while reading.
I'll prompt you with something.
Okay.
Remember the experience of reading that sutta that we read together outside on the porch. that's a good place to start.
I feel like you have an answer.
No, I want your answer. I want to hear your answer. I want your answer.
Did you have something in mind?
It seemed like you did.
I always have something in mind. I'm not at a loss for words.
I'll just start in with something. So, again, it really is just practice. It starts a little bit with first knowing that we can, in fact, be mindful, even of something like thoughts, the conceptual world. So the thing that I like to sometimes relate to in terms of losing mindfulness, because often we say we lost in thought, and it's true, we get lost in thought, but I like this, what has always come to my mind is that awareness has just gotten weak. So we tend to live with a pretty weak awareness. And if we sense that, it's like that, so that for me, that like the motion of the hand coming down, so what brings the awareness back up? Sometimes it's prompted. Sometimes it's unprompted. But as the awareness, then we recognize this quality goes up and down. Then if thoughts are there, whether they're really strong or subtle, we start to get this sense, right, that awareness can be there and the mind has some conceptual activity. Just to have that sense in the mind, okay, sometimes some thoughts can be there and a little bit of awareness. Because we usually think any thoughts at all happening in the mind, and we can easily have this opinion, well, I'm thinking, so therefore there's no awareness. So just on one level. Also, and there's so many things to practice. So one is, and this is also going to be true of devices, being on our phones and computers and things. Content, right, pulls us in. It has meaning. It pulls us right in. That's fine. So you know the content. Begin to feel the body, for example. I used to play with, okay, how easy it is to feel completely forward, like leaning in. How does the back of the body feel? Just as a way of kind of regaining this sense of connection to the whole body. A really good place to start practicing is reading a Dhamma book. I remember I was reading a Dhamma book at a retreat, and it was the first time I had awareness while reading, because the words were inclining the mind to be aware. So I was reading these words, and I was like, as I was reading, there was like more and more awareness because it was speaking to awareness. Typically, we read things, and it's almost like a movie. You get pulled into the concept of it, the meaning of it, and the awareness just gets weaker and weaker. So that's just one thing, is to play with the reading of things that actually bring the awareness up. Use the body as a support connection, and this is true in all the time, is if you just maintain some awareness of the body, a great way of moving throughout the day, right, with awareness, because the body's always there, always present, and always happening in the present moment, here, right, and the body doesn't lie. It's like, this is just what's happening. It's this moment. Over time, as you develop more awareness of seeing, it's just another part. If you practice being aware of seeing, and I really want to encourage that, develop some mindfulness of seeing, such a support. So then when you're reading, also naturally it starts to become easier and easier. So just different things, right? Awareness of seeing, awareness of the body, reading things that actually incline the mind towards awareness. And then just sometimes just sit there and just be aware without reading yet, just aware of the page, seeing black and white patterns, right? Again, eyes are open, seeing. And then as you read, just notice how the awareness goes away. This is to really just practice being mindful of reading. And then at some point you'll be reading and you'll have an awareness of the body, awareness of some things, right? That's just the work of awareness. We don't have to make that happen. That's what awareness does. It can know. It can know more and more things. Does that make sense? But it is hard. This is a more subtle, you know, terrain. Just as it's a little bit hard as we want to say something, we tend to again get so activated by what we're going to say that the awareness starts to get weakened. The more we practice that, it's natural. The awareness starts, will come back up. And, you know, now the habit for me is very strong that when I look at something, you know, the awareness comes. But that's not an act of will. It's because I've, you know, practiced that and conditioned that. Do you want to add something?
Yeah, it's variations on a theme. Right. I mean, it's very similar, but different words maybe can have a different effect. So kind of one of the ways I think about it, and this is generally in daily life, and I mean, we're dealing with content in daily life all the time, not just the content of reading, but the content of our conversations and the content of what we have to do. And so there's all of this content, and we often have this view that, you know, when we have to deal with content, and so the sense of when I'm trying to read and engage with the content of reading, there's no way to be mindful. That's kind of a view or a belief. If I'm engaged with content, I can't be mindful. That's pervasive through daily life practice. That if I have to deal with content, I can't be mindful. And so this is a great place to begin to practice that there is an interface, a place where we can practice with content. So on retreat, we have the luxury of, you know, letting go of content to some extent, you know, to notice thoughts arising in the mind. But actually what we often do here is encourage you to practice, as Alexis was talking about thought, you know, so this thought is arising in the mind. That's content, the memory, the argument, the planning, whatever is content. And then to begin to practice with, and how does that content affect you? You know, what is the in the present moment and often experienced in the body? How does that content affect you? And so in daily life, there's kind of a more, almost like a back and forth, content and how does it affect you? Content and how does it affect you? Content and how does it affect you? And in reading, it's a great place to practice this because you can take reading at your own speed. So you can practice it. Dharma book's a great place to practice with this. How does that Dharma content affect you? It often brings you into more mindfulness. And you can also practice with this with other, I mean, I practice with this with reading the New York Times in the morning. You just like read a headline. How does that one land? Okay, you know, so to the kind of back and forth, and you can take it in your own time. Because at first it does seem to need a little bit of content. How am I with that content? Content. What's the relationship with that content? And we get a little bit of practice with that. And then it can become more seamless over time that we can just take in, oh, this is how this lands. And then you can see that the recognition of how you are while you are engaged with content, there's a lot of good things to know there. You know, really useful to know what's happening internally as we engage with content externally. And this can be watching the news, watching a movie, reading a book, reading the news, reading a Dharma book, anytime we're engaged in content, hearing our child come home and tell a story about what happened in school. How does it make the heart feel? You know, so sometimes Sayadaw used this phrase, 50-50 mindfulness, 50% of the attention on what's happening, on the content, and 50% of the attention on how you are with that. So that playing with that. And reading is one of the best places to start that because you can take it a sentence at a time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. James. Caffeine. Can you talk about your relationships to caffeine and I guess, the effect of that on the mind and how that relates to substances and maybe segue into substances in general. But mostly caffeine.
Caffeine affects me a lot, so I don't tend to drink it too much because I like to sleep. It does seem like a lot of the monastics I know drink a whole lot of caffeine, so clearly it's not a barrier to development, right? It's a stimulant that, it has an effect. It has an effect, wakes the mind up. I don't have any particular, because I don't drink a lot of caffeine. But I think when we are more attuned to our mind and body, naturally we're going to know what's suitable to us. We have very different constitutions, so my particular constitution doesn't do that well with caffeine. The idea of substances. The precept there is the Buddha really cared about the awakening potential and the ending of suffering. And so if we are using those things that cloud the mind, obviously we can't really do that kind of work. There are now a lot of, sort of alternative things that people are exploring to engage in different, journeys and things. There, it's going to be somewhat individual, but again, it really sort of depends on what really are we aligning ourselves with. And whatever it is that we tend to incline the mind towards, we build bonds with, in a way. Obviously, if you build your bonds to coffee, life becomes tethered to coffee, let's say. That's not a big barrier. I've seen it. People can practice, but there's other ways these subtle attachments can happen. And just to be mindful of that, what are we taking in? That's also true with the stimulation of, of media, entertainment. And I think one of the hardest things coming on retreat is what people think of as the lack of stimulation, right? Not getting stimulated, so we fall asleep in the beginning. So we have to kind of readjust to really being able to be sensitive, because so much is happening in any given moment when the mind is more sensitive. Right? There's so much to know. It's the idea of not having anything to notice, there's so much here. And then, of course, we go back into the world and realize, wow, the world is hyper-stimulated. No wonder why we're totally bonkers on this planet, it's like, because we're all just no longer have sensitivity to subtlety in a way. But that's, so I'll pass it on. I think,
we don't have a lot of time left, but, I'm also pretty affected by caffeine and, have gone into, times when I've used quite a bit of it and then not, at this point, I try to stick to just one cup of tea in the morning and that's it. It seems to work way better for my system in terms of the capacity to get a really good night of sleep if there's much less caffeine in my system. Again, it's different for different people, but I think it's worth exploring the relationship to caffeine and seeing what happens with different, different levels of it. I actually found that when I decaffeinated myself, I had a lot more alertness. After, it took a little while, but there was a lot more alertness present, natural alertness present, that had less of a jittery quality, less of an agitated quality to it. So It hadn't particularly felt like a barrier to being aware and mindful, and yet when that was gone, it's like, wow, this is different. So I really appreciated the more settledness that was available. But I would really encourage a kind of looking at your relationship to it. You know, that's always always useful. Other things. Oh, I'll just mention a kind of my own relationship around alcohol. I did explore this myself. You know, rather than holding that precept like to thou shalt not drink, I decided to explore what was the effect. And I liked having a glass of wine with dinner in the evening. And, you know, this was in the first couple of years of meditating, and I was meditating, you know, morning and evening. And I discovered that after I had a glass of wine in the evening that it was really hard to meditate. And so it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll go to sleep and I'll meditate in the morning. And I began to notice actually that the lingering effects of the alcohol also affected the morning meditation. The following morning, it had it wasn't like I was drunk or anything, and I wasn't even drunk that night. It was just like I'd had a glass of wine. It affected the mind. And so I played with it with curiosity of how does this affect the mind? And you know, I just really so appreciated the value of the clarity of the mindfulness and what I could see and learn. It was a very natural falling away around the alcohol because it's like, I'd much rather have a clear mind than a little bit of the relaxation that comes from having that pleasant sense experience. So it was a kind of an evolution through the investigation of, oh, how does this affect the mind? And what are the benefits? And what are the benefits of being aware? So it was like no contest. You know, there was just no contest. And so it just was natural that the drinking alcohol fell away. And so I will occasionally, when I go home for Christmas and see my family, we have a tradition of getting a bottle of dessert wine, and I will have a glass of dessert wine with my family. That's pretty much the only time I have alcohol in the year. And I know, it's like, it feels like it's something, it's like a ritual. It's a family ritual that I participate in. And, you know, that feels like something that is a thing I want to do for the community. So I've just chosen to, you know, chosen the times for myself that I engage with that. Yeah. Yeah, so we should probably stop. Yeah. Any final words? Carry on.
Yes.
That's it.
So, just a reminder, we'll see you at 7:30
yes.
This evening. Here, yeah.